out and supporting me. My mom, stepdad, Nana, and aunt are here. That's a huge gift of AA. My AA sister and my sponsor are here to support me as well. That's amazing for somebody who is isolated for so many years and so alone, and I'm really grateful for all the love I have in my life. I'm graduating college this weekend. Woo! 11 years on an associate's, but I'm doing it one day at a time. And it looked pretty hopeless there for a while, but AA's given me the hope back in my life and has given me a life. So again, anytime AA asks me to do anything, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. My sobriety date is January 29th, 2005. I'm six, and feels pretty good. I'm growing up, moving up in the world. I was born in St. Petersburg, Florida, and quickly moved to Alaska. My father was a search and rescue pilot for the United States Coast Guard. So we shipped out pretty fast, and I don't have a lot of memories from being a kid. I don't remember a lot of drinking until maybe six or seven. My dad drank. He was alcoholic of his own admission, and I have memories of like sneaking around and chugging beers behind my parents' back. And I remember at New Year's when we got champagne. I finished mine, and my brother and sister didn't finish theirs. They thought it was gross, and I chugged theirs down because I thought it was wonderful. And then when I was eight, my dad got sober, and it was a dry house. I went to AA meetings. I was a big part of the fellowship. My mother was highly involved in Al-Anon, and we were a big, heavy AA house. And at least that's what I told you. And I got started young, doing what I want when I wanted. I thought I knew everything. I didn't need anybody's help. I was supposed to do it all on my own and get out of my way because here I come. And so when I was in the seventh grade, I was starting to become aware of this feeling that I just didn't belong, that there was something wrong with me. I didn't have words for it. I just knew that nothing was perfect. I always felt sad, like I didn't fit in. When my mom would go to the grocery store, I'd think things like, it's because she doesn't love me. It's because I'm horrible and bad and worthless human being. And so in the seventh grade, you know, I'm looking to fit in. I'm looking to belong. And this new girl moves to town, and she's telling me about this gang. She's from some city. And so I'm one of the gangs that wear the bandanas. So I'm going to join this gang with her, and I'm going to be tough, you know, because I'm really sensitive, so I need to be tough and protect myself and make sure you stay away from me. And so I'm getting ready, and she's, you know, she's telling me what I got to do to get in this gang. And you either got to sleep with all the guys in the gang, or you got to get beat in. Well, I wasn't about to subject my moral principles. You know, I was a good Christian girl. I was going to keep my virginity until I was married, so I was getting ready to get beat. You know, and thank goodness for great parenting, because my father noticed the personality of this young woman and ended our friendship quite quickly. And, you know, it's funny, the more sober I get, the better my parents get. It's amazing. You know, they're really actually great. So, like I said, I was growing up in AA and going to school, just was very antisocial, got into riding horses. That was something I was passionate about, and I'd put this face on every day like I was fine and I liked you, and I hated everybody and I hated myself, and I just wanted to disappear. So there's this one horse show I was at. It was my 17th birthday, and this is the first time I ever had the opportunity to drink, and I didn't know it was going to happen. my horse got sick. I had to spend the night at the barn with my horse, and he needed to be walked every hour on the hour he was going to die. And so I was trusted to stay there with my horse and take care of him overnight. And one of my girlfriends was 21, and she went and picked up a case of cheerleader beer, and she had one of those cool, like, 90s watches that you set an alarm on, and it would go off every minute, and we'd chug Zima every minute, just chug, chug, chug. By the time I was through my third Zima, I was in a blackout. And I have one of those blackout memories of handing somebody my horse, and I was gone again. And the next day I woke up, bang, bang, bang on the trailer door, your horse is down, the vet might have to put him down. And I didn't care. I did not care. For the first time in my life, all that pain was gone. Alcohol did something magical for me that I later found out it did not do for 9 out of 10 people. So, but it did it for me, and I fell in love. And slowly but surely, little by little, drinking became my number one priority. I started giving up the things that I was passionate about in life that I cared about. I was in honors classes in school, and I don't know how I graduated high school. I somehow passed. And all I could think about was partying, planning parties, big parties. And getting freedom inside, that's what I was really looking for, is to get free inside just so I could breathe and be a part of this world. So I went off to college for a year. By the time I was on my way to college, I had been arrested for stealing. I had been arrested for underage drinking and minor in possession of alcohol. And I had had some, I'd gotten caught a lot with drinking and just gotten a lot of trouble. And almost jeopardized my opportunity to go to school. So luckily my sister stood up for me and says to my dad, you have to let her go to school. She needs her education. And then I pulled the other card, which was, oh my God, you were right all these years. I must be an alcoholic. I'm going to go to AA. So I went to AA, and off to Jersey I went. And I got a sponsor, and I'd show up to meetings, and I looked at you guys, and I was like, you guys are weird. I don't want what you have. I'm going to Manhattan. And so that's what I did. I went to Manhattan, and I partied. And I got a buddy, and I'd drag her to AA meetings with me just in case my dad called. And I'd show up to meet with my sponsor just in case my dad called. And I went on like that. I partied for a year, and blacked out for most of that year. And then when I came home, that rebellion inside of me, that desire to do what I want, when I want, without any regard to anybody else, was doubled. And I decided that I was not going to continue my education there, that I was going to go to a different school. I was going to do it my way. I don't want your help. Thank you very much. And so I moved to an all-girls school. And I had the plan. You know, I was going to go to Harvard from that school and continue my equestrian activities, and painted a really good picture. And then that, I totally, you know, disgraced my family. And I embarrassed them by doing things like living with my friend and her boyfriend and his roommate. And that wasn't what I was raised to do. I did whatever I wanted to do. And so that winter, my father passed in a freak motorcycle accident, and I use that as an excuse to do what I want, when I want, how I want, even more. And I moved away to Atlanta, and didn't draw too many sober breaths after that. Went to Atlanta, and then I decided that I was going to move to California and save the world. Volunteer for a volunteer organization out there, and off I went, and I stayed out there for 2 years, did a lot of partying there, did a lot of partying in Vegas and San Francisco, and just the more I drank, the more I wanted. And at that time, I didn't know that I couldn't stop. I thought I could stop. I thought I wanted to drink like that. People would say, God, Kelly, when are you going to stop? Why do you drink so much? And I'd say, because I'm an alcoholic. I knew I was alcoholic, but I didn't know what that meant. So I stayed out there 2 years, finished my program, and was at this like fork in the road of, am I going to go to Georgia and do my education there, finish my education there, or am I going to stay in California and finish my education there? Because I had residency in two states. And of course, I made a, this really like dramatic decision. So I went up to my aunt's in Rhode Island and got drunk for a week, came out of a blackout, and she says, well, I don't know if it's the right thing to do, Kelly, but it's the best thing to be with your family. So I stayed in Georgia. That was the answer. By the time I was in Georgia, I moved to Athens, Georgia, to continue my education there. I was working two jobs and putting my life back together and telling you how good I am and how great I'm doing. And I wasn't. I was dying on the inside. The more I was doing, the worse it was getting. And I went to class for about a week. At this point, I was a daily drinker. I remember distinctly waking up on Wednesday, coming to on Wednesday, and I was hanging out with some people, and I was asking them about the party that we were going to tomorrow on Thursday, and they said that was last Thursday, and I had been in a blackout for an entire week. Now, I had only been drinking since I was 17, and here I was, 22, a week-long blackout drinker, and I was going to work. Sometimes. This is what my schedule was like. I would go to work at 2 o'clock in the morning and work until 8 and drink. And then I would go to my second job by 10 and I would drink there. That was the coolest job ever. For $1.75, they had 32-ounce bottomless margarita cups. And so I sipped on those all day. Then I'd have a pitcher of beer with my friends after work. Before I went to the clubs in Athens, there's like a club, like there's club next to club for like six square blocks. It is party central. It's perfect for an alcoholic. I had a blast. So I told myself. So I did that for a while, and then I'd drink, and sometimes I'd show up for work at 2 a.m. drunk and take a nap in the locker room, or sometimes I wouldn't show up, and so, they were done with me. I got fired from my other job, and I wasn't showing up for school. So I got a boyfriend. That was plan B. And he was a real character. He did not mind at all that I stayed drunk all the time, and that was great. It was true love. I came out of blackouts telling him, yes, baby, I love you. I want to get married. Yes, let's have children. But that's the plan. All right. Just keep it coming. And so what ended up happening for me to get sober is he went to jail. And I destroyed all my relationships with my family. And even the people who drank like I drank didn't want to drink with me. I was definitely a Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde. I was really sweet to your face until I got what I wanted. And then the claws came out. That was not fun. People would say things to me like, oh, Kelly, I just didn't know you were like that. I'll call you. I never got any phone calls back. So there I was, all alone. Nobody would support me. I can't blame them. I burned all my bridges, and I remembered that AA has a responsibility statement. And that statement is that anytime, anywhere, anyone reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And I thought, well, I'm going to start detoxing. I need some cigarettes and some gas in my car, and I could really stand to rust up for a little while because nobody's going to take care of me in this condition. And so off to AA I went, and I showed up at a noon meeting, and I said, I need a sponsor. I'm new. I need a book, and ready to go. So week one, I was good to go. I was coming in and out during meetings, in and out of blackouts, coming to detoxing, and at the end of like a week, 2 weeks, I had some friends come into town that I hadn't seen for a year. And these friends, I told these friends, I don't drink anymore. And they said, thank God, we support you in your decision not to drink. And they had rented out a club. We were going to shoot a video. So it was a career opportunity for me to go to this gathering. And I told my sponsor about it. I prayed about it. I went to a meeting and shared about it. I had a way out, and I had a buddy. So there was no way that I was going to drink at this encounter. I got there, and all my friends were supportive, and, you know, we talked about me because that's my favorite topic, and I had no idea what they'd been doing for the last year. And I went to the bathroom to freshen up, and I made a beeline to the bar, and I said, and I'm thinking in my head, I don't drink, I'm in AA. I'm consciously thinking this. And I walk up to the bar, and I say, give me 2 shots and a martini. And I was in a blackout before I left the bar, and right then and there. And so I woke up the next day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I thought, oh my God, oh, I'm in trouble. I've got to get whatever this spiritual solution is, this psychic change, this whatever that I don't want, that I don't think is going to happen for me. Because in that time frame, I got it that I wasn't going to die. I got it that as an alcoholic, I got to go on to the bitter ends, and I was living in hell. And during that relapse, I came to and was frantically searching for beer and fell over. I was so drunk. And the time came when I wasn't blacking out when I was drinking. And when I was drunk, I was still in all that emotional pain that I had when I was a kid. All that emotional pain that medication didn't fix, that religion didn't fix, that all the therapy I did didn't fix, that the boyfriends didn't fix, that nothing fixed, only alcohol fixed. And then alcohol stopped fixing it. So I went back to AA with a new attitude and found a sponsor talking about God and living the AA way of life. And got really busy, got in the books, got active. I finally gave. I finally said, okay, I'll do it your way. What do I have to do? I'm willing to do anything. I'm not going to make it. It finally clicked. And So I had that sponsor for a while. Then I got another sponsor and had that sponsor for 4 years. Did a lot of service, sponsored a lot of people, and went to a lot of meetings. I was busy. And at 5 years sober, my dreams were coming true. I'm living in Brooksville, Florida. I've got my own farm training facility, my own clients, training my own clients. It's a dream for a horse trainer. I've continued to train. I was managing a high-end breeding farm with the best bloodlines for quarter horses and thoroughbreds. And I'm also running a training facility, a conditioning facility, getting ready to invite the United States Equestrian Team to come train there. And I'm telling you guys all of this that I'm doing, and I'm doing so great. And I'm so busy in AA, and I'm dying on the inside. And that was a big turning point for me in my sobriety, when I'm going, what's wrong with me? Why isn't AA working for me? I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm not getting better. And I wasn't willing to drink again, because I wasn't willing to go on to the bitter ends. Somebody who drinks like me ends up on the street, and as a woman, that's not pretty. That's where I'm headed if I drink again. And so my solution was suicide. And so I had a shotgun. You know, I'm a good old country girl living on the farm, and I got stuck on how I'm going to commit suicide, because I needed to figure out, you know, I'm a long time sober now. I've got 5 years, so I'm thinking about other people. And, you know, so my suicide note is blame me. I'm taking responsibility. And I'm trying to figure out how to move my shotgun so I can shoot myself in the heart. But I'm scared to die. So I want to make sure I'm going to hit my heart, and I'm going to go out like that. And I don't want to shoot myself in the head, because I know that my mother likes to have an open casket. And God bless her, I'm going to give her an open casket. So that's where I was at with 5 years sober. And then I found out there was a person in town who I had heard their tapes and been to their workshops about emotional sobriety. And I knew that this person knew what was wrong with me. And so that person now is my sponsor. I stalked this person and asked for help. And I'm very grateful that he said yes. He's the best sponsor in the world. That's, it's really, you know, he'll say, AA saved my life. And, you know, I thank him that he was willing to show up for AA. And I got started on emotional sobriety, and I found, I was given the information of what Bill W. found out and how he got free from his spiritual depression and what he did and how he did it in order for it never to return again. And this was huge. This is something I've been dying from my whole life, and I never knew what was wrong. And now I know what's wrong with me, and now I know how to fix it where I'm happy. It's like I'm telling my sobriety sister the other day, like, something's really wrong. And she's like, yeah, you're happy. It's going to take a while for you to get used to it. So now I have everything in my life that I fought, and I am so successful with all these things in my life. I have direction. I'm accountable. I have structure. And, you know, I'm graduating this weekend. I'm moving to D.C. the next weekend to go live by my boyfriend, and my life is just exploding. My world is getting huge, and the biggest thing is that I can breathe. I'm okay solitary, which is amazing, and that's the miracle of AA. And, you know, I'm glad I hung in there. I'm glad I didn't quit, and I'm glad I gave something that I judged a try. And found out that it would work for me, too. So congratulations to all the celebrants. And welcome to everybody who's coming. Keep coming. It works. And thank you.
I'm Hallie. I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the First International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all have the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with fraud and complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.